time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquids simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Jakub Grigiel, a professor of politics at the Catholic University of America, a senior advisor at the Marathon Initiative, a visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Civitas Outlook for the Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin about Europe right now, and its confrontation with Russian Federation and its allies, not only as Europe, but also as the EU, also as NATO. There's some overlap, but it's not one-to-one. Jakub presents us with a scenario in a new book, If Russia Wins. It is written by a German national, I believe, with great experience in national security and also thinking through problems, as people in national security do. They call them tabletops. They used to call them war games. And this war game is a fascination. Jakub, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Before I set the scenario up, were you surprised if Russia wins? You say it's a very thin book. I don't have it right now. I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's in translation. Were you surprised at how compelling it is, or the way you read it is most compelling to me? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, too. Yeah, it's a very short book. Very, you can read it in a few hours. And it's, as you mentioned, it's written by a German national security expert who teaches at the military university in Munich, the University of the Bundeswehr. And his name is Carlo Masala. And it's a thought experiment. And I was surprised that, well, A, it came out of a German national security expert who is actually very good. But it's a somewhat of a rare thing in Europe to have a thought piece, a book that is very worrisome about the future of European security.
I'm going to plunge into the scenario, and we'll stop along the way because you have very, very careful comments. The scenario is this. It is year 2028, 2029, 2030, sometime in the immediate future. There is a resolution of no resolution in Ukraine. There's a front line between the Russian-occupied right now, parts of the Donbass, and the Ukrainian sovereign territory. The front line is monitored, surveilled, supervised, enforced, managed by a transnational organization, perhaps the UN, perhaps the OSCE, something approved by both sides. And then the measure of the Kremlin is we're not done. And by not done, meaning they're at war with NATO. They're not at war with Ukraine. Mr. Putin has said that repeatedly for the last years, NATO. And they want to make NATO a paper tagger, their opinion. At this point, I stop because you comment that Europe will not interrupt what you call a Kantian dreams of eternal peace. Translate that for me, Jakub. What is Europe like in your impression right now?
Well, right now, Europe is worried about the war in Ukraine. Less so about what happens to Ukraine and more so about the fact that they don't want a war on their continent. They're afraid of it because they're thinking that over the past 30 years, this was something that would never happen and should not happen. And it should end as quickly as possible. And they're not terribly concerned, in my view, how this war ends. And that's why the scenario is interesting, because it thinks that it provides a situation in which Ukraine is still there, exists on the map with some territories that has lost, but the war stopped. And no matter how one looks at that scenario, it's a victory for Russia. And that victory or that war ending for the Europeans, I think, will be seen as a great success because, well, war has ended. Now peace has returned. And by Kantian peace, I mean this idea that you can engineer a peace through negotiations, through legal arrangements, through international institutions. And even if there is the members of these agreements or these institutions are different in nature, domestic regimes, different in interests, the international institution per se will, or the international agreement per se, will be sufficient to maintain peace. And I think the Europeans have lived with this idea over the past decades, thinking that the EU is exactly that, has provided that Kantian peace. And whoever is not in it is simply somebody who has not fully understood the meaning of history. And so ending the war in Ukraine for them would mean for some of the Europeans, for most Europeans, I think, would mean that, okay, now Russia will get with the program, will return to some path of cooperation with Europe, and for a lot of Europeans, a path of economic cooperation, namely trade that provides natural resources, gas, to Europe in exchange for some products that the Europeans may or may not produce. But the main problem, the main interest for the Europeans is energy. And so, again, the scenario here is that this author provides is a few years from now, 3 years from now, 2028. And, you know, the peace or the war has been stopped, and Europeans are supine, happy to return to this dream that Europe is at peace.
All right, let's go back to the scenario. Suddenly something happens in Estonia, a small Baltic state with a frontier that sits on Russia, right across the river. Russia takes the city of Narva, which is right there, speaking Russian all the time, I'm told, very dominated by Russian speakers and Russian culture and Russian television. I think it's 100 miles or 100 kilometers to Petersburg. It's very close. They take Narva and the island of, I don't know how to say this, I'll just sound it out, Huma, which is right there in the river. Then they sit there. They don't go farther. Now the excitement. Because a NATO country has been attacked. Article 5 is ordinarily what we talk about. Article 5 will be invoked. An attack on one is an attack on all. And it doesn't happen. How do the Europeans respond to what the Russians have done? Plant their flag, but nothing else. Oh, I mentioned, there's suddenly trouble in the Philippines. The People's Republic of China gets very aggressive. And the U.S. military, the Navy, moves into the Pacific. There are other questionable activities around the realm of Europe. I mentioned that hybrid warfare involves gray zone activity, gray zone warfighting. You can't be certain who did it, such as the dynamiting of the rail line in Poland the other day. The Polish are now saying it was Ukrainian nationals who fled into Belarus. You figure it out. So that is also happening, but the Russians are sitting there, not moving. What is the thinking in NATO, according to the book, Jakob?
The thinking in NATO, according to the book, is that the situation is confused. Those are the words, I think, in the book of the French president. And therefore, you know, more thought has to be given on the situation. In general, there is some worry or some opposition to a military response, because a military response to this Russian attack would involve escalation. The Russians have made it abundantly clear in the scenario that they do not want to go further. There was just a sort of almost a small operation in Narva to protect Russian speakers. And they don't plan to go, you know, to Lithuania. They don't plan to go to Germany. They don't plan to go to Poland. That's it. And so now it's the ball is in the court of NATO, and NATO, a lot of members of NATO are worried that they would have, in order to respond, they would have to hit much harder than Russia did against Estonia. That would involve attacking not just the front line in Estonia, but also the logistical bases, missile installations, airports that are in Russia proper. So again, an escalation. So ultimately, in a book, the U.S. president, the main voice after all in NATO, decides that in this case, if it's 2028, early 2028, that would be President Trump, decides that it is not worth it. It's not necessary and will be dangerous to start essentially what he calls a World War III for a tiny piece of land in a tiny little republic, Estonia. So what happens, which is, again, you know, a scenario that has been talked up a lot in the past several years in various national security circles, is the country that has been the target of a Russian attack in this particular scenario, Estonia, would not even call for Article 5, because it's much more dangerous to ask for Article 5 and get rejected. So knowing that there would not be unanimity and it had to be a unanimous vote among NATO members, Estonia just doesn't invoke Article 5 of the NATO treaty, the North Atlantic Treaty. And that's the article that says that an armed attack against one or more of the allies in Europe or North America will be or shall be considered an attack against them all. So it's not even the failure of Article 5. It's the realization that there is no cooperation and there's no unanimity among NATO allies, and Estonia is left alone. It doesn't call for Article 5.
I mentioned that the author is inventive with his gray zone activity. He talks about explosions near a submarine base, nuclear-powered submarine base. He talks about the sudden unexplained death of a German manufacturer in defense industry was shot down. In other words, those are gray zone activities that would tend to upset everybody, especially the headlines, and NATO would be alarmed. And when we're going to turn now to what have we learned in this scenario, it's brief, didn't take much. We have incidents like this all the time. So remember, Russia is at war with NATO. So what is to be done if NATO won't use Article 5? Jakub Grigel, writing at Civitas Outlook for Civitas Institute.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, it's me, your heart. Mind if I pick the next song? Listen, even though we're eating better, people who've had one heart attack are at higher risk of another. But Repatha Evolocumab plus a statin lowers LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, and our heart attack risk. So let's talk to our doctor about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. View the important safety information in our banner. Listen to your heart. Ask your doctor about Repatha.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers, available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.